True story. There was a man, and his job in the early 1900s, he made it his job to convince people to make Aliyah, which was not an easy job because to live in Palestine back then was a life of poverty, a life with no security, a life risking your life. But he would go around from community to community and tell people, we now finally have the ability to live in Eretz Yisrael. This is what our people have been dreaming of for thousands of years. And he would convince people, and people would actually start moving to Israel because of this man. He came to Chicago, and there was someone, I'm forgetting the name, but he was very inspired. And he decides he's going to leave his business and make Aliyah. But before it would take him a couple of months, he had to wrap up the business. So he sent his son in ahead of him to learn in yeshiva called the Hebron Yeshiva. Yeah, but now it's in the Mir. They have a Hebron Yeshiva in Hebron. You
Yeah,
may
it's
have been
that
in
one.
Shaveh Hebron. They moved that officially. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's a beautiful yeshiva. The point is, unfortunately, in 1929, maybe you heard on your Hebron tour, terrible tragedy, 69 Jews were killed. And this young American boy, after learning Shtark for, I think 9 months, was killed, tragically. So this the rabbi would still come back and go from community to community, convincing people to make Aliyah. But there's one community which he would always avoid, Chicago. He couldn't bear to see the face of that father who he convinced his son to go to Israel. It was scary. So he avoided him at all costs. Until one day it was a wedding in New York, and there he was. And he tried to go the other way, and the father came right to him and gave him a big hug and said, "Where have you been? Yeah, I haven't seen you forever. How come you're not in Chicago?" And he goes, he tried to make some excuses, but the truth is, he didn't have a good excuse. He said, "I'll tell you, I feel terrible about what happened. I'm so sorry." And the guy said, "What? What do you feel terrible about? You saved us." He says, "What do you mean you saved us? Your child." He says, No. We believe, b'emunah shleimah, that everything that happens is from Hashem. So my son had to die. I got this amount of years with him, 20 years with my son. He's either going to get cancer, he's going to die in a car accident. And because of you, he died as a kadosh in the holy city of Hebron, in the highest chambers in heaven, because you gave him this chus to learn 9 months of Torah in Eretz Yisrael and to pass away." So that's the story. It's a true story. It's an incredible story. So now I want to just put it back, relating to our shiur today. What's the main lesson that you get out of a shiur like that, out of a story like that? What do you take away from when a rabbi says a story like that?
Like as their child, like he said, like I'm not blaming you for telling me to send my son there, because it's better that he died like al kiddush Hashem rather than died like chas v'shalom, like my kid was gonna have cancer, like be in a car accident.
Right.
But I don't think that's what some people
saying. It's a very, very high, very, very high level. I agree. I agree. What else? Any other thoughts?
Just thinking about like the guilt that the person had for convincing the son to be Aliyah, how he was trying to avoid the father, but the father was actually really happy and wanted to see him. So kind of how we shouldn't really make assumptions on what people are thinking, because we never know what people are thinking.
Wow, that's very creative. I never would have thought that, but that's absolutely right. You're right. It's a very nice lesson. I think it's a deep story and has a lot of lessons. I'll share what I think. On a very simple level, it's about the power of emunah. That the power, that Jewish belief that everything's for the best, Hashkacha Pratis, gives us the power to take the most terrible circumstance possible and with our brains transform it, sweeten it, so to speak, make can't say make it okay, but make it better. Man, be able to deal with it. Because of the power of belief that everything's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's something we're gonna get back to. Because that's the topic of this class is, as always, Hashkacha Pratis, but specifically in the realm of other people. What do I mean by that? So, it's a little bit easier to say you're going down the road and a giant bear attacks someone, I don't know, or a thunder hits someone. So it's a little easier for us to say, okay, it was all from Hashem, I don't know, is this time to go? Right? If you stub your nail, okay, I didn't do anything wrong, it wasn't anybody's fault, it just happened, it's all from Hashem. This is what we've been reiterating throughout our shiur. Nothing happens without it being mukhraz min hashamayim, the Gemara in Chulin that we talked about so much. It's easier for us to deal with that. What's a little harder, what's more complex? To deal with other people. When someone does something to you, so first of all, emotionally it's a lot harder. But why? Because a part of us feels like, no, that maybe that's more complicated.
That person didn't have a right to do that.
Right. When someone does something bad to us, naturally, we fight that and we say, was that really from Hashem? We might say it, you know, but do we really believe it? And it is a little more complicated. Because what's the other, besides the Shkacha Pratis, that is kind of conflicting, contrasting with, in this story, when I go over and, you know, throw someone at something, and I hurt them, I throw my frisbee and I injure someone terribly. So, what does it feel? What does it feel? It feels like that person, when I threw that frisbee, I had Ashkacha Pratis. If I punched someone, I chose to hurt them. Free choice. And so free choice is a very Jewish concept, as we'll see. So the question is, how do we find the balance between those two concepts? And who wins? Okay, so that's what we're going to play with today. Sounds good? So first of all, I have to ask a silly question. Who says we have free choice? Do we have any sources to back us up with the concept of why we would believe in Judaism that we have the ability to make a decision? Oh, very good. So on a very simple level, he says, wait, I mean, do the mitzvahs really make any sense? If I don't have a choice to do mitzvahs, then what's the point? Right? Not only mitzvahs, but also the concept of reward and punishment. We believe that we're going to be rewarded every good mitzvah we do, but if we had to do it, it was going to happen anyway, so why are we getting rewarded for it? And vice versa, being punished. If it had to happen, why are you being punished for it? Right? Good. Mitzvahs. The Torah says, I give you a choice. Choose good. Right? It says, choose life in Sefer Devarim. So that's another biblical source that from. We all also saw Talmudic sources. Remember, said, and everything from Hashem. Chutzmi, kol bit shemayim, chutzmi, yirat shemayim. It's char for alicha. It's char for running. So you get rewarded for everything from Hashem, but yirat shemayim, your choice to do good or bad, that's you. Right? So that's my decision. So we have biblical sources. We have Talmudical sources. And see, it's the kind of the under reason for all of Schar Vonesh. I think there's another reason, and that is just on a personal level, right? Do you feel right now like you can lift your right hand and throw a phone and hurt someone if you want to and not? I think naturally, intuitively, everybody feels that. It's an impulse, and when somebody does something bad to us, we naturally feel like they're responsible. Possibly, we feel like there should be justice. There should be responsibility because we intuitively, you can give us all the philosophical shears in the world. At the end of the day, we do feel like we make a decision. We can affect the world. So our experience and Judaism seem to say that there is such a thing as free will. And indeed, again, I didn't bother with source sheets. You'll just flow with me today. The Rambam says rather famously in Hilchos Tshuva, Rishus l'chol adam natuna. Every person has free will. If you want to go to the good path, you want to be a tzaddik, you be a tzaddik. And chas v'sholom, if you don't want to be a tzaddik, nothing's going to hold you back. Hashem's not going to hold you back. Okay? Why not? Why? I mean, let's philosophize for a little bit. Why is it important for Kadosh Baruch Hu to give us free will? Exactly. You have that because there's no point to the world if we just have to do everything. We have to have free choice. That's what makes life meaningful. That's the whole goal of life, to choose. That's why it's the first bracha in our Shemona Esra, Atachanan Vadam Das. Very nice. There would be nothing. We'd just be automatic angels. He's got enough of those. So we're all on the same page that we believe in free will. Adkan, we're happy? Good. But we're also on the same page that we believe in Hashkacha Pratis, right? Because we just had two shears last week, and to summarize, you said, Amar Chanina, nothing happens except when it's from Hashem. And remember the Ramban? We learned that the Ramban said one of the fundamentals of the belief of the Jewish people, one of the Ikare Amuna, is to realize from the big miracles of the Torah that even the small things are all from Hashem. There is no real nature. And he says, a person doesn't believe in that, he has no chilek in the next world. That's how fundamental of a perspective it is within Judaism. To believe that there's a shkach ha-prat, that Hashem watches over us. He can just create the world. So, good, we have two concepts. And they sometimes, it's hard to understand how they go together. Okay? For example, again, I'm in that situation. I see a guy and I decide to punch him. Did I choose to punch him? Or did God decide or make me punch him?
Both.
I think Hashem wanted him to be punched, but you decided to be the one to do it.
Oh, yes, okay.
But also,
so,
that could just be an impulsive like thing. Like, I right now can impulsively like slap this guy across the face. I want to, but I'm not. That person is going to get punched either way.
Right. Yes,
Hashem sets it up. But
so they had to be hurt. They didn't necessarily have to be hurt by you, but they had to be hurt.
Yeah.
They had to experience a certain degree of pain, but it might not have happened by you, it might have happened some other way.
And it doesn't mean that person that punched isn't going to get punished.
Yeah. Okay, so I see you guys are already philosophical geniuses, so you've already read all the Maimonides, but humor me. And we'll run through the sources together. Maybe we'll learn some new things.
Yeah, I totally know every single
source. Of course. And just a little preface is, to be honest, we're philosophers. We're doing our best to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the end of the day, the Rambam says, "Lo machshavotai machshavoteichem." We don't understand how Hashem thinks. We're not, his brain is not like our brains. But we do the, we do our ishtalos. It's a mitzvah for us to learn Torah and try to understand how Hashem runs the world. For the purposes, as we'll see, of bringing that back into our Avodas Hashem. Okay, so if we don't walk away with a perfect understanding, I think that's okay. Maybe we're not supposed to understand everything perfectly, but we'll do our best. We'll do our best. Okay, so there's a few stories in the Torah which relate to this question. Let's start with the story of the Jewish people going down to Egypt. Okay? Was it ever predicted in the Torah that the Jewish people would experience an exodus?
Yeah.
To who? You remember? Avram Avinu. That's right. Indeed, Hashem comes up during the Brit Bein Habitarim. He tells Avram Avinu, Precious Tetvav Yud Gimel, if you want to check me, you know your kids are going to be Gerim. Lolam Abadum, and they're going to be subjected. V'inu otam abamach, and for 400 years they're going to be subjected to terrible, terrible pains. Okay, so it seems like we, the Jewish people, for whatever reason, it was destiny that we had to go through this terrible experience of pain. Okay, who ends up doing that? Of course, the Egyptians. So some of the mefarshim, a lot of the mefarshim wonder. Wait a second. If God's intention the entire time was for the Jewish people to be punished, so then why is God mad at the Egyptians? I mean, they're just doing what God already wanted them to do, that were destined to do that. So why are we upset at the Egyptians? Okay, so turn on your commentator hats. Some of you could be Ramban, some of you could be Rashi. What do you think? Okay, so give me some answers. Why are we still upset at the Egyptians? What do you think? Because they had free will. But Hashem wanted them to get punished. Oh, yafe. So answer number one is Rav Sadia Gaon, Elia's new name. And Rav Sadia Gaon says they had to get punished, but it didn't have to come through the Egyptians. Could have been through somebody else. Actually, in a much more complex shir than now, Rav Soloveitchik actually goes through the stories of Yaakov being subjected to pain through Lavan, and apparently Yaakov thought that that was the Golus of Mitzrayim. 210 years, 21 years, he thought the affliction was going to come through him. It didn't have to come through the Egyptians. Maybe it could have came through some other ways. Okay, that's one answer. Very good. I think that's the class. Yafeh. So Rivka's saying answer of the Ramban. Yafeh. Sorry. Okay. You guys can... Yafeh. Beautiful, beautiful. So it could be that Ramban and also the Ravid criticizes the Rambam. And they said, no, the Egyptians were supposed to punish the Jewish people, but they did too much. In other words, the Jews were supposed to get 50 pains worth, and they gave them 150 pains worth. So God is angry at them because they went overboard. Okay? Personally, I don't connect to that answer so much. Because first of all, like, how are they supposed to know? Who is their prophet telling them how much pain? And what? If the Egyptians would have given them 50 pains worth, we would have been like, oh, that's cool. Great job. You only, like, killed, you know, half a million and not, like...
It was out of, like, their own logical thinking. Like, they saw, like... Originally, like, they were... Jews were integrated into their society and they were becoming outnumbered. So they did what most societies would do if they wanted to stay in power. They said, okay, we need to do something. We need to, like, figure out the situation.
So you're saying some degree of affliction would have been reasonable, but not too much.
No, it would have been like saying, like, listen, like, we're happy to have you here. Just, like, chill a little bit.
But how would that have been inui? How would that have been affliction? If the prophecy was an affliction that had to come.
But it turned into affliction.
But again, the question is, God wanted them to be afflicted, right? That was the plan. And the Egyptians did it. So why are we mad at the Egyptians? So you're saying, well, the Egyptians didn't have to afflict them. Then who would have afflicted them? Then someone else would have afflicted them. There we go. And that's basically Leah's answer. She's saying, yeah, maybe somebody else would have done the affliction. So, but we are upset at them that they did it for their reasons, which wasn't right.
I think they just enjoyed it too much because they wanted to.
Right. They weren't doing it out of their reason. They were doing it out of enjoyment of giving pain to the Jewish people. Okay, it could be. The Rambam gives a very famous and interesting answer. He says that the Egyptian people were destined to punish the Jewish people, but every individual Egyptian had to decide if they were going to be part of that, Holocaust or not, right? The Nazis are going to do it. The Germans are going to do it, but did you have to sign up to be a Nazi, or you could have been one of the people who defended the Jewish people. So, or save them. So, very interesting answer. Okay, very obviously relevant nowadays. But what do they all agree on, all these opinions? Everyone seems to agree that it had to happen. Hashem intended it to happen. They were going to go through this experience of pain. The Egyptian, one way or the other, it was God's plan that they were going to be destined to experience pain. In this case, we have psukim, which showed that it was God's intention, so it's not surprising. And what's the problem that they, you know, let's say go with the first answer, the simplest answer, the Egyptians didn't have to do it. When you decide to kill someone according to this answer, you put the gun to his head, he was going to die anyway. But you are going to be punished because it didn't have to come through you.
But it's true, because, like, really, everything that happens, it's meant to happen, you don't have to be the one to send out the
mission. Right. Exactly. And that's the perspective which we are explaining right now. Yes.
This isn't like an answer, maybe just like an addition. I heard, I might be wrong, that when the Nazi conference, when the Egyptians were going through, didn't everyone get their exact, like, compile or, like, punishment that they deserved? Like, one slipped on this rock, one, like,
yeah,
that.
That's what the Midrash says. Is that so exactly cool. They got punished, Midah Kenegan Midah, for what they did. You actually see that in Pshat, by the way. Because what did the Egyptians do? They threw the babies into the water. Okay, and what happens to the water? First it turns red, it turns to blood. And then they die in the water. That's what Yitro is impressed with. Exactly in the way that they punished, that's how God punished them. The Shkacha Pratis. So it's one of the biblical sources for Shkacha Pratis right there. And the Midrash reflects that concept. Yafet. So far, all good. Now, I want to make our life a tiny bit more complicated, okay? Because there is another opinion, and it's important to just be aware of this opinion, and that's the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, right? My old city rabbi, who is one of the four commentators you'll find in every Chumash, the Ramban, Or HaChaim, and Rashi, of course. The Or HaChaim says a very famous and very controversial comment. Let me pull it up. Hold on. And I'll just paraphrase it. Or HaChaim says like this. A person possesses free will and desire and can kill someone who does not deserve death. Let me say that again. A person possesses free will and desire and can kill someone who doesn't deserve death. I assumed you wouldn't. Now, what's the context he's saying it in? He's trying to explain why Reuven throws Yosef into the pit. Okay? Now, why is Reuven throws Yosef into the pit, which is filled with snakes and scorpions. We all clap and say he's a great guy. But Rashi says that it was filled with scorpions and snakes. In other words, he was throwing him to his death. And the brother just wanted to kill him straight up. I don't know. Would you rather die through like a bullet or through scorpions and snakes? Like it's a tough call. So what exactly did Reuben do that was so great? That he, you know, that he's, how did he save him? He's gonna die with the scorpions and snakes. It's almost like, oh, so you see he runs back and Rashi says he was gonna try to save him, but like when? I mean, the brothers are right there. When was he gonna have time to swoop him? He's hoping that the, okay, but by then he'd probably be dead. So he could give answers. There's a lot of answers. But the Or HaChaim says like this, when I throw him into the snakes, who controls the snakes? God. When I kill him, who controls me? According to Or HaChaim HaKadosh, me. I have free will. And so I can kill him, and so he said better to leave it to Hashem and not let these brothers do the deed. Again, I'm not convinced it's the only answer. It's a very, very interesting and creative answer. But it shows that Or HaChaim seems to believe that you can do something which is against the Ratzon of Hashem.
Well, I think even with that answer, it's like if he's meant to die, then it's working. I don't want to be like the catalyst
for his death.
Yeah, so it's still the same. He was meant to die either way.
I like your answer, but it doesn't seem to be what the Or HaChaim is saying. Or HaChaim, let me say, a person possesses free will and desire and can kill someone who doesn't deserve death. Yosef did not deserve death. Hashem didn't want to kill him, so to speak.
But Hashem didn't kill him. Like, in Sefer's class, we were talking about David, and like we got to the part where I forget who brings David Shaul's head and is like, oh, he's dead. And David's like, how can you do that? Like,
the Amalekite.
It's like, you want to kill Shaul so much. And David says, well, Hashem gave me all these opportunities and it was never worth it to Hashem. Like, if Hashem wanted me to kill him, I would have, but he had all these opportunities if he didn't. And like, same with saving David's life. Hashem saved David's life from all these crazy situations, even though it was a deathly situation.
So, in other words, Hashem could clearly save people.
Like,
if he wants.
At the end of the day, like, Hashem's not the type of being where it's like, this is good, like, this is what he wants and this is what he doesn't. Because he can live but through all time. Like, that's not a thing to him. Like,
he can do anything.
He knows both what will happen if anything happens. So it's not like a plain field when you think about things that could happen. There's like too much going on.
For sure, in terms of Hashem's cheshbonus and all that, I agree with you. But I'm still asking the question. According to Or HaChaim HaKadosh, can I, Yehuda, pull the trigger and kill Yosef if he doesn't deserve to die? It's not his time, so to speak. But he seems to say pretty clearly, if a person possesses free will and desire and can kill someone who doesn't deserve death, unlike evil beasts, which don't touch a person if he isn't deserving of death, according to heaven. In other words, if even though heaven doesn't rule that he's going to kill him, nonetheless, he has free will, and he could have killed Yosef without Hashem wanting that to happen. Okay? Yeah.
Okay. So, yes, that person does have free will and can kill if he chooses, but it's up to Hashem what happens, how that bullet affects that person. Like, okay, he can choose to kill, but is that bullet going to kill him is up to Hashem.
I like it. It's beautiful. I don't think it's what the Or HaChaim is saying.
Okay,
he says, and desire and can kill someone. And that's how it only makes sense. That's why Reuben wanted to throw him to the animals, because there Hashem decides. But with the bullet, Hashem doesn't decide. Now, I'm not trying to make you guys sad or angry. This is just what Torah is. But it's just important to know that Or HaChaim HaKadosh does exist. Now, what do we do with it? Okay, it's a very interesting answer. I want to do with it two things. First of all, do a little thumb twisting. Okay, so we're in a base medrash. We do some thumb twisting. So you could answer like this. I have no idea. Bored yeshiva. I don't know. So you could say like this. We have a concept that God judges a person more strictly when they're in a dangerous situation. Right? You know the whole story with Binyamin. Yaakov didn't want to put him in a dangerous situation. Because when you put yourself in a dangerous situation, or when you're just in a dangerous situation, then there's like judgment on you. And if you don't deserve to make it out, then you're not going to make it out. So you don't want to put yourself in a dangerous situation. In other words, we can do things which will affect God's judgment upon us. Right? It's the basis of all of Tomer Devor, the class I teach next, that through kindness we can overturn God's judgment. That's all the basis of Tefillah. We can do stuff that can affect God's judgment. Right? So according to, or perhaps the concept is that God is going to, at the end of the day, have to decide if this person is going to live or not. Right? He can decide whether the bullet's going to ricochet or not. I actually have a friend who went through the Arab quarter, got stabbed like that, and literally bent. Make sure, his name's Avram. He's a friend of mine. It literally bent. So it could happen. It could be that he would have been saved. But by me putting him into this situation, by pulling that bullet, he's going to be judged in heaven. And if he doesn't deserve kind of a miracle or something like that to save his life, then my action is going to cause Hashem to, so to speak, cause him to die. Okay, you understand? I'm trying to imagine that still Hashem has to agree with it. That's why I said it's a little bit thumb twisting. I'm not sure if I even agree with what I'm saying. I just thought it was a creative answer that I heard. I think there's a simpler answer. The simpler answer is like this. Sometimes in Judaism we have different perspectives. Okay? You're going to see this throughout all of our Torah learnings. At the end of the day, we're going to have to make sense. How do I apply it to my personal vote as Hashem? And we will do that. But you will find sometimes in different opinions in the Gemara, and Rishonim, and Achronim, sometimes there are minority opinions. And then we have to see what are the consensus of Judaism rule at the end of the day. What do most rabbis throughout the generations rule? I think this opinion of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, while it's important and famous and interesting, but it's not the mainstream. It's not what almost everyone agrees upon. And for a good reason. So we're going to see a lot of sources which seem to disagree with it. And for all I know, to be honest, I could be the Or HaChaim is learning one day in the Beis Medrash, and if you had an idea. And I don't know if every single idea that he ever wrote to explain the pshat in Chumash is necessarily Torah Min HaShamayim. You know what I'm saying? It could be it was a concept, but even maybe he didn't take it. I don't know. I wasn't there when the Or HaChaim wrote it, but it is an interesting idea. I'll say one more thing about the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Perhaps the Or HaChaim HaKadosh perspective is stressing a different angle than what we've been stressing tonight. And it's a little bit what the guy was talking about on Lag BaOmer. Remember the guy, I don't know his name, he came up there, the first speech, and he said, you know, there are people who go to Meron, and they say it was meant to be, this terrible tragedy was meant to be, it wasn't because of our actions, we don't have to take any precautions. It was from a Kaddish Baruch. And what did he say? He says, not true. That's not the proper Jewish perspective. The proper Jewish perspective is to take responsibility. When we make a mistake, we do tshuva, and we made a mistake, and even though we do believe at the end of the day everything happens from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but sometimes we don't enter into that way of thinking of things. Instead, we enter into the way of thinking of how can I make the world a better place? How do I take responsibility for the world? In other words, let's say I'm a doctor. Say, I don't take every person who's bleeding in the emergency room and I'm like, well, it's from Hashem. It's all good. You know, it's meant to be. Like, what are you getting so worried about? I'm in Mincha. You know? No, even though it's from Hashem, I have an opportunity, I have a responsibility to do my ishtadlis to kind of forget about the fact that it's from Hashem. Act right now like I can make a difference. After the fact, I'll worry about how it's all from Hashem. Right now, I have to pretend, Hashem wants us to live in the universe of responsibility. Okay? So maybe that's the world Or HaChaim wants us to enter into. He wants to say, you know what? We have to live in both worlds. Okay? And if you doubt it, how can you live in both worlds? We do this all the time. It's called tefillah, right? You start your Shema Kolenu, and I'm all about what I need. Oh, I need my mom to feel better. I need to get good grades. I need to make that college. I need to get a good shidduch. And then 3 seconds later, I'm in modim. And what's going through my head? Everything's amazing. I don't need everything. Thank you so much, Hashem, for this. Thank you for that. Thank you for my mom. Thank you for that. Thank you. They're both true. It's just a question of what reality I'm entering myself into right now. You can, but the question is, what am I focusing on? There's a time and a place for everything, is basically what I'm saying. In other words, you're at a Shiva house, you don't start saying, actually, he probably died, because we learned that everyone who passes away, it's because of sins that he did. So it's actually Yusurim. You know what I'm saying? Right. Exactly. There's a good video on YouTube about things not to say at a Shiva house. So that, like, it might be theologically true, but it's not what we focus on right now. So they're bending on, you know, rabbis have to pick their drushas, okay? So most of the time, the drushas that the rabbis focus on is emuna and hashkacha. And there's a good reason for that, as we'll learn about, okay? But it's also sometimes important for rabbis to talk about responsibility, and free will. Right? For example, just one last point. When Rabbi Jonathan Sacks was asked about the Holocaust, what does he take from the Holocaust? He says, I'm not God, I don't know, but for me, he says, the lesson is human responsibility. For me, the lesson is, it's almost as if God, to allow people to have free will, allowed the world to exist, and now it's our choice whether we're going to make genocides and believe in man, or whether we're going to fight that through love and through Tikkun Olam. So, this Or HaChaim concept is helpful in the concept in the context of the Holocaust, but you're definitely right that not everyone is going to connect. Some people definitely don't connect to that way of speaking about the Holocaust or things in general, and some people do. For some people, that way of looking at life does speak to them, that we have to take responsibility for our actions and fix the world and not focus so much that it's all from Hashem. We have to act.
I think that that's the right like outlook to like
function.
Have that human responsibility, because that's gonna make us. That's gonna help us be stronger, closer to Hashem. But is that the reality? No. Like I.
Okay, so you're saying be'emes, it's all from Hashem. But sometimes I have to act in a world where I'm pretending like it's not from Hashem.
Yeah, not even sometimes. We always have to.
Okay. Like, yeah, fair. So hold that in mind, not this year, but I hope is about the time we're going to talk either 2 weeks or soon exactly about that. Bitachon and Amuna and working and all that, and how does it all work together? Everything's related, but keep that in mind. But I just wanted to, go on a rant a little bit about that, or HaChaim HaKadosh, and those different concepts. Okay. But with all that said, definitely the mainstream opinion, you're going to see in Rishonim, you're going to see Ashkenazim, Sephardim, Misnagdim, Hasidim, is what we were saying before, which that really it is from Hashem. Really everything happens from Hashem. There's no such thing as Yosef being killed by the brothers when Hashem didn't want them to die. It was definitely from Hashem. Okay? By the way, in the Chumash itself, there's a proof that what happened to Yosef was definitely from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anybody know what I'm talking about? There's a few proofs, actually. Give me a proof that what happened to Yosef was actually from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, we ended up going to Mitzrayim. If you know the whole thing, that's how the Jewish people became who they are. So that could be an argument. Okay, good. What else? Okay, so he had a dream and... So it was all predet, and the dreams couldn't have happened unless this whole thing happened. Okay, could be. Burial. Not that I know, but maybe. Here's what I think. Two ideas. First of all, you have that guy, that random guy who just shows up to the scene in the middle of the story and directs Yosef to the brothers. If you ask me, that random guy, Gavriel, according to Chazal, is indicating that this is directed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay? Because he didn't have to show up and send them to Dothan. Right in Perek Lamed Chet, or Lam Zayin, and he gets to a certain place, and there's a man who shows up, and he says that the Chaya Nochim Vakesh, and he sends him down to meet with his brothers. So to me, that, and the Chazal say it was Gabriel. So I think that perhaps that message is to teach us that Hashem was directing this whole story the whole time. The Malach Gavriel, according to Chazal. But there's even a better source. Not Chazal, not my Chidushim. Yosef himself. Remember what Yosef says at the end of the day, at the end of the story, when he reunites with his brothers? Why do the brothers... Yes, but what else? Yomer Yosef Elachiv. Exactly. Yomer, Ani Yosef Achicha, Mashar Mechart Emoti Mitzor. Remember you sold me down to Egypt? Vata Al Ta'atzvu. Don't be sad. Vayichar Beinechem. Everything happened for a reason. Everything happened so that I can bring sustenance to the Egyptian people. Yosef himself recognizes at the end of the day that what the brothers did was actually from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's clear in the text. There's probably no better story of Hashgacha Pratis in the entire Torah than the story of Yosef and the brothers. It seemed like it was from the brothers. It seemed like it was all for sorts of reasons, but ultimately... Yosef and the Chumash stresses it was all from the Kodesh Baruch. And with that, at the same time, we have a tradition, many different traditions, that the brothers were punished for their misdeeds. We see in the Chumash itself that they have to do tshuva, that Yosef is getting them to do tshuva. Perhaps you're familiar with the Midrash that the 10 sages who died, and we read about them on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. They were, it was a part of the tikkun, part of the kavara for the 10 brothers who did who sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim. So you'd have to explain maybe there's some tikkun of Gilgulei Nishamot or something like that going on there. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is Chazal want us to hold both of these things at the same time. On the one hand, it was totally from Kadosh Baruch Hu. On the other hand, you're still culpable. You're still responsible for your actions, like Rashi Yigon said before. You can't say, "Ah, it was from Hashem. I needed this. I don't need to do tshuva because Hashem wanted me to do that sin." Maybe he did, but it's still now your obligation to do tshuva, and because he wants you to do tshuva right now and to lift up those holy sparks. We have to be able to hold both of these concepts, which do seem contradictory, at the same time. We have to believe that it was from Hashem, and yet at the same time, we have complete responsibility for our actions. Okay? And it's not the only contradiction within Hashgacha Pratis and Bechira Chavshis, right? Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Rishus Netuna, you have free will, Vakol Tzafun, but everything was predestined. How does that make sense? What does Rambam say? We don't know. But we trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He can know everything that's going to happen, and at the same time, we have free will. Because his understanding of things, the way that his brain works and that he runs the world, might be beyond our comprehension. Yes?
I think that what it might mean is that, like, Hashem's myth has, like, an ending first. It's just about, like, we pick how we get there. Like, you know how, like, on Netflix, there's a show that, like, you can watch, like, different, like, all the episodes on board.
Choose your own.
Yeah, you, like, you can watch whatever episode first. Like, there's a jillion different combinations, but, like, the ending is still the same. It just, so, yeah. Like that's,
yeah,
that's like how I think.
It's very
Hashem has an end plan for you, but you pick how, like, you get there. Like, let's say you're supposed to marry this person, but, like, let's say you guys, like, end on horrible terms. You go and date another guy and you think you're going to marry him, but in reality, like, you're going to end up with the guy that you originally were first.
Another, at the end of the day, Hashem has his plan for exactly how much Hana'a and how much Shalom Bayis and how many children, everything, and exactly how you get there. It might be dependent on you. Okay, fascinating. By the way, Bezrat Hashem, next week I was thinking of doing Hashgacha Pratis and Bashert and like soulmates and all, how that all goes together. So a beautiful segue. But yes?
Yeah, so this kind of has to do with like the random God who's sent you to, which was Gabriel. So Rabbi Wallerstein actually gives this really cool idea. It was Pesach Seder in Haggadah. Okay, so I don't even know how it goes. Like the dog is over, and then the stick that hit the dog. And then the stick that hit, in there, it's the stick that hit the dog. Who picked up that stick and hit the dog? That hidden stick is Hashem's hand. Yad Hashem. That we don't see is so hidden in the story that you don't see that's Hashem maneuvering things, just like the random guy.
And that's that guy, like the Gabriel who shows up.
Yeah, Bracha spoke about that with Esther. I don't know if anyone was Makashi. It's just explaining about how, like, you starting with Vashti, like what happened with Vashti in the beginning was most likely a frequent occurrence, but this one night she decides that she doesn't want to, and Brock was saying, if you woke Vashti up the next morning, why did you do that last night? She'd be like, I have no idea, something just came over me, and in that one instance, that was Hashem making something happen that would lead to Esther going in, it would lead, like, you don't see... Because it's over a period of time.
So in other words, it's like Hashem might even get into our thoughts, and he can, and he gets involved when he needs to get involved.
See, what a human can get into your thoughts. If a human can, what can Hashem?
He can.
He created your thoughts, like.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So let's just. By the way, there's a Gemara which also indicates that pretty much explicitly the Gemara in Tainus that if someone's gonna die, they're gonna die. The question is, if you're gonna kill me and you're gonna get punished for it, or if some animal's gonna kill me. But there's an explicit Gemara which seems to indicate the mainstream approach, which is that ultimately everything is from Hashem. And I'll finish off with my takeaways. One from the Sefer Achinuch. Sefer Achinuch is an early Rishon, and he's talking about the mitzvah of nekama, of vengeance, of why it's usher to get vengeance. And he says, you know why? Because a person needs to know and internalize that anything that befalls them, good or bad, is caused by God, blessed be he. And from the hand of his fellow man, nothing can come about without the will of God, blessed is he. So if he did something wrong to him, if I'm going to be angry at him, then I essentially am being koifer. I'm not believing that it's all from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? And by the way, it's mamish, we're talking about Ashkacha Pratis, I daven mincha today. I'm very open with you girls. So at mincha, I saw at the Kotel, I don't know why this happens to me so much, but I saw someone who I really don't like very much. Because a long, long time ago, he caused me to get fired from a certain yeshiva. And I never really have forgiven him for it. Because the trajectory of my life has changed very much because of that. And I've always been a bit, and like, in my head, I've always been like, you know, I should go talk to that guy and like schmooze and confront him and like have him apologize. But then I thought to myself, I'm about to come to you girls and teach you the Sefer HaChinuch. And Sefer HaChinuch is reminding me and reminding us that ultimately that guy wasn't the cause of why I lost the job, right? Not so important. After class, I'll tell you my whole life story. But it wasn't him. And if I'm thinking it's him, maybe according to Or Chaim HaKadosh, I have what to rely on. But according to everybody else, it's silly. It's kofar. It's not believing in the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Same reason the Lubavitcher Rebbe says that if you get angry, it's avodah zara. Why? Because if you're angry at someone else, then you might be thinking that it's them and it's not Hashem. That's as if worshiping someone else. And a Baal Emunah has no reason to ever be angry at someone else. No reason to be jealous. Because at the end of the day, he internalizes that it's all from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So at the end of the day, as you know, as we always reiterate, this is just like a booster in our Emunah. But, you know, we can know these concepts intellectually, but my experience is that we need to work on it every single day by talking to Hashem about Emunah, by, I don't know, listening to podcasts or you inspiring stories, because you might know something intellectually, but at the end of the day, you need to feel it to get to a level of not ever reacting with anger or being happy. And there's not the sham, but I do believe that, you know, this Emunah class, if you really we internalize it, is a key to a very, very happy life. Shkoyach. Thank you for a wonderful, wonderful class. It's a kif. And there's not the sham. Next week, we'll learn about Pasher.